Chapter 8, Brave Neighbors. We are all in the same boat in a stormy sea, and we owe each other a terrible loyalty. G.K. Chesterton. While much of this book has been targeted at brave action in the workplace, we also need to address the importance of brave action in the places where we live. Great nations and municipalities are sustained by great neighborhoods, and great neighborhoods are forged by brave neighbors. I'll fully admit that it's possible that my perspective on this subject is skewed by endless hours spent in front of the TV as a youth watching a Pittsburgh Presbyterian pastor extol the responsibilities and wonders of community. Fred Rogers launched the TV show Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood in 1968 with the goal of reclaiming the medium of television and bringing a sense of stability, encouragement, and community to children in his city and soon beyond. The show ran for 31 seasons and spanned 4 decades, impacting the lives of millions of children. Most adults between the ages of 25 and 65 instinctively complete the musical phrase, "Would you be mine? Could you be mine?" with, "Won't you be my neighbor?" In 2018, a documentary about Rogers' life called "Won't You Be My Neighbor?" expanded on his philosophy. He said, quote, "Love is at the root of everything. All learning, all parenting, all relationships, love or the lack of it. And what we see and hear on the screen is part of who we become." Rogers believed that children needed to see models of generosity, kindness, healthy conflict resolution, dealing with anger and frustration, and citizenship. Through the recurring characters and rhythmic rituals of his episodes, he aimed to provide a stable, safe environment for children to learn about the world, including its more uncomfortable realities. Rogers directly dealt with issues such as racism, death, divorce, and social class in his programs, teaching children to engage with one another with empathy and directness. If Rogers' philosophy, "what we see and hear on the screen is part of who we become," is to be believed, blame for the significant downward spiral in civility and empathy in our culture could be largely placed on the shoulders of our leaders and media influencers. It's rare to find examples of cooperation, collaborative problem-solving, self-sacrifice, and, in the words of Rogers, love modeled through today's media. Many, if not most people, have grown jaded and skeptical of the agenda-driven news from each side of the political spectrum, or worse, only from the side they disagree with. While we have felt simultaneously dehumanized by a media who wants to split us into easily divisible segments in order to sell us soap, pills, and pillows. If change is going to happen for the better, it will begin in our neighborhoods. We can commit to engaging bravely with one another, protecting one another, and forming alliances that help us stand for common values. We can rehumanize, reconnect, and engage in brave conversations with others who may disagree with our perspective. Doing so doesn't mean that we have to end in agreement, but only that we are able to find common ground in the larger principles that bind us together. How to be a brave neighbor. Let me be clear that I'm not pointing fingers at you. No, this is also a finger in my own chest. It's a call to action for all of us to act bravely within the space where we have the most direct influence, our homes and our neighborhoods. Here are a few principles for being a brave neighbor. Build real relationships with people who don't look or think like you. It's natural to gravitate toward relationships that make us feel comfortable. This means that we prefer to be around people who have the same interests, perhaps the same income level, and same political opinions. There's nothing wrong with this. It's a part of what allowed humans to survive and flourish in times when being excluded from a tribe meant being abandoned to the elements and almost certain death. Having commonality within your group meant your identity and protection was secured. However, in today's world, these natural herding instincts that protected us in a world of warring tribes is betraying us. Isolation and dehumanization lead to cultural death in a hyper-connected world where societies thrive through understanding and collaboration more than dominance. Brave neighbors take bold steps toward inclusion and are willing to invite others into their comfortable circles. They seek commonality. They initiate conversations. Recently, I heard Cent Marshall, CEO of the Dallas Mavericks basketball team, speak at an event about the importance of inclusion in the business world. She said, "Diversity is being invited to the party. Inclusion is being asked to dance." Be the brave neighbor who invites others to dance. Question: do you seek out relationships with people in your sphere of influence who don't necessarily think or look like you? Protect one another. Brave neighbors watch out for one another and are willing to step in and intervene when there is an injustice or cowardly action affecting their neighbor. Once I was scheduled to speak at an event in New York City at the end of a very long string of speaking engagements. I was tired from my travels, but fortunately my hotel was only a few blocks from the venue, so I decided that a nice mid-morning stroll down the streets of New York City would be a great way to spark my mind awake and get me in the mood for my talk. About halfway to the venue, I noticed a commotion at the side of the street. A man was yelling at a woman who was crying and screaming at him. Around them, a few dozen people had gathered, many of them holding their phones up to record the interaction. I made my way closer to the altercation and quickly realized that this was a dispute over cab fare. The cab driver had taken a hold of the woman's purse and was shaking it back and forth as the woman refused to let go. In that moment, something welled up inside of me. To be honest, I didn't know who was right or wrong in the situation. Maybe the woman was trying to stiff the cabbie. But regardless, there was no excuse for a man twice her size to be exerting that kind of physical force and intimidation on her. I stepped through the cell phone gawkers and injected myself into the situation. "What's going on?" I asked. "She owes me money for her fare," the cab driver replied. "I don't owe anything," the woman replied. "And he's making me late for my job interview. I need this job." Her face was red and her makeup was beginning to run down her face because of the tears. She was obviously shaken. I looked straight into the cab driver's eyes and said as firmly as I could muster, "Let it go." He could tell that I meant business. A woman who had previously been watching from the sidelines came over and I asked her if she would help the crying woman. They walked over to the curb to search for the building where her job interview was scheduled. Once I knew the crying woman was all right, I diverted my attention back to the cab driver. "Okay," I said, "I'm going to make this right with you, but before I do, I need you to promise me something. You can never, ever do that to a woman again. Do you understand how frightening it is for someone as big and aggressive as you are to be tugging at her purse?" He said he understood, and although he initially tried to justify what he did, he eventually apologized for his actions. "How much do you believe she owes you?" I asked, prepared to part with $50 or more. "$5. I was stunned. All of this for $5. This whole spectacle was over what amounted to an overpriced latte. I pulled out my wallet and I handed him a 10, which was the smallest bill that I had. "You promise me you will never do this again," I asked before I let go of the bill. "I promise." He got back into the cab and I continued on to the venue. The cell phone gawkers resumed their day. My mind was certainly sparked in that moment. Now, I tell this story not in order to say, "Hey, look at this thing I did," but to prod you to consider that you've probably done the exact same thing at some point in your life. Maybe you didn't intervene in an altercation, but there was some circumstance that compelled action, and before you knew it, you were squarely in the middle of the action. These moments punctuate our lives, but we often discount them and we just move on with our responsibilities. While moments like this won't happen every day, there are ways in which we can seek to protect our neighbors in less obvious but probably more important ways. For example, walking an older neighbor home or helping them with their groceries. Checking in on a single parent to see if they need any help. Keeping a watch over the neighborhood kids and sharing with their parents when you see them doing something incredibly amazing or frighteningly dangerous. We need others to stand in the gap and protect us, and they need us to do the same for them. Question: what would it look like for you to become a protector in your neighborhood? Do the unseen things. Brave neighborhoods are forged by people who are willing to do the right thing even when it's not seen by their neighbors. They try to make the world around them a little better than they found it. And they don't need credit for what they do. They do it because it's the right thing. One of the many things I admire about my wife is her commitment to the principle of doing unseen things. We routinely take long evening walks around our neighborhood, and on one of them, we came across some litter at an intersection, and she remarked, "Ugh, I can't believe people just throw their trash on the side of the road." While most people would have just waited for the street cleaners to take care of it, the next day she brought a trash bag with her in order to collect the garbage we encountered along our walk. Did she do it for the credit? Did she do it because she knew I would write about her in a book? Of course not. She did it because it made our neighborhood a little better. Even if no one noticed, she would know. What small, unseen behaviors would make your neighborhood a better place to live? How might you show love to those around you by doing what everyone else thinks of but doesn't actually do? By engaging in these kinds of behaviors, you model agency for everyone around you and you paint a picture of a better possible future. In other words, you forge an environment in which brave action is more likely to occur. Serve one another even when your actions are invisible to those around you. Question: what unseen actions might you commit to as an act of service to your neighborhood? Listen, I know that this chapter might feel a little out of place in a book where we've been talking about launching ideas and collaborating on projects. However, you cannot separate your work life from every other part of your existence. You are at the center of every commitment you make, and therefore, every experience you have is an opportunity to develop the habit of bravery or succumb to the comfort of cowardice. When you choose brave action in your neighborhood, you are preparing yourself for your next big presentation. And when you have a difficult conversation with your boss, you are reinforcing the habits you will need to forge friendships with people you disagree with. We need brave leaders willing to do what's right in the face of discomfort in the place where they live. Will that be you? Or in the words of the immortal philosopher, won't you be my neighbor? Checkpoint. Great communities are built upon great neighborhoods. Consider the following. 1. How can you be more intentional about the relationships in your neighborhood? 2. What does it look like to be a protector in your neighborhood? 3. What small actions can you take to improve where you live? Action step. Consider one brave action that you need to take in your neighborhood this week. When will you act?